The recordings have started. You may now proceed.
Thank you. Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, everyone, depending on where you are. This is the 83rd CWG meeting. It's now 14:04 UTC on the 19th of July, and I will turn it over to Jonathan, who is chairing the call today.
Thanks, Grace. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the CWG meeting. Lisa will be joining us shortly. She's got delayed, and so I will chair this meeting, and I'm hoping and expecting that she will chair the forthcoming meeting on Thursday, 21st of July. As you know from our previous meeting and from our discussions online, we're entering a phase of regular meetings where we want to assist the ICANN staff in their implementation work and make sure they can proceed to conclude this work as soon as and efficiently as possible. Just to remind you, we are no longer running with the Implementation Oversight Task Force. Because we're running the high-frequency meetings of this group, we will simply use our main CWG group to try and bring the work to its logical conclusion. And again, a reminder of our role in all of this, and that is to ensure that the implementation is consistent with the proposal, and to that extent and wherever appropriate, we are relying on Sidley's advice to some extent, and certainly my opinion, and I've discussed this with Lisa, and I guess it was evident in that email she sent earlier, there is a limit to how much any of us have the expertise to delve into all of this, these contractual details. And to some extent, we are relying on both staff in their implementation and Sidley in providing us with a cross-check to make sure that the work is consistent. And to the extent that there is a form of disagreement or an issue to iron out, a wrinkle to iron out, that is where the group needs to be involved. So I think it's important that we don't second-guess the work of the implementation staff or, indeed, of Sidley, but try and add value where there are any issues that need resolving. We gave Sidley the go-ahead to work directly with ICANN staff, as they did with the CWG on accountability, and for the most part that seems productive, and I'm sure we'll hear if there are any issues with that. But that's the essence of it. There are three public comment periods running, and you may hear more of that. I mean, it's a little inelegant in one sense in that the articles of incorporation of the PTI, the governance documents, and the PTI bylaws are not running entirely simultaneously. Their public comment periods have been kicked off at slightly different speeds, initiation points. And that's partly driven by the view that the articles of incorporation need to be returned dealt with at a higher or more early than the some of the other documents. But we will come to that perhaps as to how we try and synchronize that, because there are issues with them being out of sync, and we do need to make sure that, for example, there is a common purpose to both documents, and there are other ways in which Sidley have advised us that they would like to see these synchronized. So we may well come to that in a little more detail. The open items, there are a series of actions that we had to deal with, and I don't know if it's possible to paste those either into the notes field or live on the screen. But we did have a set of open actions that needed to be dealt with. Thank you. That's helpful to have them there. So ultimately, the plan is to submit comments on the PTI articles of incorporation as part of our public comment submission. Ideally, we put a single public comment on the articles, which deals with the two points that are there. But if necessary, we will submit it twice. There are two points, one of which is deals with the purpose, and there is one other point which are summarized in the table that you have recently seen, and that's to do with the threshold for amendments. So there'll be two points that will need to be made there. You have that table that I've just referred to, which is why that second action is struck out. there is work going on online, and we can perhaps get an update as to the purpose of the CWG or the purpose expressed in the articles and bylaws. There's a couple of instructions. There's an instruction to the client committee, which is complete. The red lines of the governance documents have been provided to Sidley. I've had the opportunity to look at them. Others of you may have. There's work in progress to produce the table on the ARZERC, how the ARZERC charter is being addressed, and that will be dealt with a little in this call, I think, in the update from staff. And we plan to meet with the IETF trust reps and the IPR reps in Sydney next week. The IETF meeting is running in Berlin this week, and so that's made it difficult to schedule a meeting this week. The ICANN staff, implementation staff, now have posting rights to the client committee mailing list, which was agreed on our last call. So that creates an opportunity there for ease of dialogue and interaction. I think those were the main points I wanted to make in opening up the call. As I said, Lisa sends her apologies and will be with us shortly, but I don't think we'll hold up the call at this point. At that sort of overview level, we'll get into various of the specifics in a moment. Are there any questions or issues that anyone would like to raise at this point? Okay, seeing no hands raised, I'll move us on then to the implementation update from ICANN staff and hand that over to Trang. I think we'll hear from you in a couple of other areas later, Trang, in terms of, for example, describing the process behind the intercompany agreement and the headers there. But to give us an overview and make sure we're all similarly oriented, let me hand over to you now under item two.
Thank you, Jonathan. Hello, everyone. Brenda, if you could be so kind as to move to the next slide, please. And next slide. Next slide. Thank you. We'll stay here for a moment. In previous CWG calls, we have shared with you sort of the status using our dashboard slides. For today's call, I'd like to show you this this overall slide instead. This is a slide that we use to give an overview of all of the projects according to the three tracks. As a reminder, track one has to do with the zone management aspect. Track two has to do with all of the implementation items relating to the ICG proposal. And track three having to do with implementation items relating to the CCWG proposal. So as you can see there, we now have a few check marks, and the check marks obviously indicate that the work is completed during track one. The two items, the parallel testing as well as RZMA, have both been completed, and that's why you see those check marks there. Now, as I mentioned, there's some minor work to be done to wrap up those couple of things. For example, on the parallel testing, we still need to do a summary report, if you would, of the process that was undertaken for NTIA. It's a typical type of report at the end of a parallel testing period that we have always provided to NTIA, even in past parallel testing efforts. So that's one remaining item to be done, but essentially the critical piece of completing the 90-day issue-free parallel testing period has been completed. And then also for the RZMA, there's some follow-up work that needs to be done, such as getting the ICANN board approval on the RZMA and moving forward with execution of the document. Those are all items that still need to be done. But the critical piece of reaching agreement with VeriSign on all of the terms of the agreement has been completed. And then in track two, which is the track that concerned the CWG the most, as you can see, there are a couple of items that we've checked off, which essentially are the agreements with the IETF and the RIRs. As you know, those were signed in Helsinki or during the Helsinki week. And as you can see there too, by mid-August, we anticipate that we would be able to finalize quite a few more items in Track 2. We have several things that are in the works. For example, the CSC, we expected that would be formed by mid-August. Friday is the deadline for all of the appointing organizations to submit their candidates to ICANN so that ICANN can then forward them to the CCNSO and GNSO for final approval. So that's on track, and we anticipate that the CSC will be formed by mid-August. The RZERG, we anticipate initiating the process to ask the appointing organizations to start appointing members to the RZERG hopefully this week, initiate that process, and then hopefully we'll have the RZERG also formed by mid-August. The IANA operational escalation processes, that's just essentially updating of the current process documents, and the team has already started to do that, and it's very close to finalizing those, so we don't expect to see any issues with finalizing that by mid-August as well, and potentially even sooner than mid-August. Naming service level expectations, or SLEs, which are the new metrics that the CWG design team A has defined. We have a call that is scheduled this Thursday with design team A, and it has also been opened up to the entire CWG for those that may be interested in attending. On that call, ICANN staff will present the data that we have been collecting for the last 3.5 months, as well as our recommended threshold for each of the metrics that has been defined by the CWG design team A. And that approach is the agreed upon approach with the design team A in Marrakesh. So that's moving forward according to the schedule that we agreed to with the DTA in Marrakesh as well. So we hope that we would be able to finalize that discussion with the CWG on the threshold and agree to the thresholds by mid-August. So as you can see, we do, and then obviously PTI incorporation, the articles of incorporation to PTI, we expect the public comment period to close at the end of this month and to have the articles finalized and approved by the ICANN board in time to file for incorporation prior to the August 12th date, which is the date that we have to submit the implementation report to NTIA. So as you can see, we do have quite a few things that we would expect to be wrapped up by mid-August. And then for those items that we know will take longer to complete, number one is the naming functions contract that we'll be discussing a little later today. We won't be starting public comment period on that until closer to the first, the early part of August. So obviously that contract will not be finalized by the time we have to submit our implementation report to NTIA, but we would have started public comment period, which hopefully would give NTIA some assurance that the process, that there is line of sight for that, and there is a path to concluding that contract before September 30th. Similarly, the intercompany services agreement is another agreement that we do not anticipate will be finalized by mid-August, but we expect that there would be a first draft of the agreement circulated to the CWG for review before August 12th. So again, that should be work in progress at the time that we have to submit our report to NTIA, and hopefully that would also give them line of sight into finalizing that agreement prior to September 30th. And then as you can see there, the last project that is going to take us probably all the way through the end of September to complete is the IANA IPR. According to the timeline that we saw circulated by the IANA IPR group, it looks like the anticipated timeline is to have the contracts ready and finalized by around mid-September, and that executions of the contracts would take place towards the end of September, right before the transition. So that's currently sort of the long pole in the tent, if you would, in terms of the projects on track number two. And then for track number three, which is the CCWG-related work items, the majority of them, we, as you can see, we anticipate that we would be able to complete them by mid-August. The articles of incorporation, the comment, public comment period had closed, and we are working on the staff analysis. And then the ICANN board meeting, during which the board will consider and approve the restated articles of incorporation, I believe is in early August. So we'll probably have to push that out, but there's line of sight into that, and we should be able to have that finalized by mid-August. Reconsideration request is just essentially updating of our process documentations to reflect the changes that are in the revised ICANN bylaws. We don't anticipate any issues with completing that by mid-August. The empowered community, as I mentioned previously, that's essentially making sure that there are support mechanisms in place in case of that needs to be triggered right after the transition. That's administrative work, and we anticipate that we should be able to get that done by mid-August as well. And then the last item on the list there, at the very bottom, the implementation of the post-transition financial planning process. That includes everything such as the caretaker budget frameworks for the for PTI as well as ICANN, as well as the PTI budgeting process, which is under discussion with the DTO. So I think we're probably a little more than 50% done there, but I guess that's a conservative estimate of the work that's the amount of work that's being done. And I would assume that that's something that we should be able to finalize sooner than August, middle of August, because the input of that will need to feed into the public comment for the PTI bylaws, which close on August the 11th. Jonathan, that is it in terms of my update. I will stop here and see if there's any comments or questions.
Thanks, Trang. I see Olivia wants to come in with a comment or question. Go ahead, Olivia.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. Olivia Crépin-Rodon speaking. And thanks very much for this update, Trang. It's very helpful. I just have one point of clarification with regards to the actual length of the bars that we have there. I note that, for example, in the independent review process enhancements, the 10% bar seemed to have lasted many months, and now we've got 90%, which will last 3 months. I gather there is no proportionality at all. I mean, the two are unrelated. It's just that you've moved this this piece of work till later. Is that correct?
Thanks, Olivia. Yes. So let me explain the bars and the percentage complete a bit more for clarity purposes. Obviously, the bars indicates when the project started and when we anticipate the end date would be. For some of the projects, it's a little misleading because for some of these planning work actually started before November, but since we only have space on the slide for the month of November of last year, you know, we started there, but some of those projects had a start date earlier than that. The percentage complete actually is an aggregate of all of the tasks under the under that project. So, for example, there may be, I don't know, 10 tasks under, I'm just making up a number, 10 tasks under the independent review process. Each of those tasks has an estimate of how much time and effort it would take to complete that task. And the roll up, what you see here on the slide in terms of the total percentage complete, is an aggregate of the roll up of those individual tasks underneath each of the project. So we may have five of the tasks being, you know, 90% complete, but in terms of the weight of those tasks, it's not, maybe it's not weighted as much as the five remaining tasks. But the five remaining tasks may have a shorter time timeline to completion. So it doesn't necessarily indicate that there is, 10 more months of work there for the 90% that's left. Chuck, Olivia.
Did you want Olivia or Chuck?
Olivia, did that answer your question, or did you have a follow-up before we move on to Chuck?
Yes, thanks very much, Trang, sort of speaking. I do have one small follow-up, and thanks for explanations. That absolutely makes sense. Just on the topic of the chart itself, I gather this is not It is a Gantt chart in a way, but do you foresee any tasks that cannot start until the previous task is finished, or are we set for all of these tasks being able to proceed in parallel? And that was all. Thank you.
Thank you, Olivia. Yes, there are dependencies for some of the subtasks underneath some of these projects. And this deck actually has more detailed project plans for each of these projects. Brenda, if you can scroll through a few slides and let's get to keep going. Yes, stop. So this one is an example of such, a project plan. This is for the RZMS and SLEs. As you can see there, the dependencies are indicated by the arrows, which means that those tasks have to be completed before we can start the next task. So that level of detail is provided here in the more detailed project plans that we included in the appendices of the deck. Chuck, please go ahead.
Yes, if you can go back to the previous slide, I have a follow-up on Olivier's question and your response. The chart there shows that the independent review process enhancements won't be completed until the end of September, and yet I thought you said that all the CCWG tasks are expected to be done by mid-August, so I just wanted some clarification on that.
Thanks, Chuck. Yes, I did miss that. I think that's one that currently we anticipate will take us all the way through to September. This is a bit of a I don't know what the right word is, but a unique or a project in that there are a lot of enhancements that are recommended to the IRP process. However, the way that the bylaws are drafted, there is what you would consider to be the minimum requirements versus maybe the future state of what was envisioned. And I think this is going to be one of those projects where, obviously by the end of September, we'll have to have the minimum required in place. But the future state, the envisioned future state, I think will probably take us past the September 30th date to complete. So for example, the standing panel, that is a process that we could initiate before September 30th, but the bylaws has provides for a mechanism for us to move forward even if the entire standing panel is not seated. So, for example, if we only have two or three seated, we can still proceed with that, and the bylaws does allow for that to occur. So it's one of those projects where I think, we'll have to have the minimum, obviously, in place by September 30th, but I think work will continue on that project post-September. With this project, we're essentially sort of guessing and reporting on progress of the community. As you know, there's a subgroup within the CCWG called the IRP Oversight Team, I believe, IOT. That team has been is led by Becky Burr and has been meeting to define procedures for the IRP, which is required to either continue to retain ICDR or a new vendor. I think the path that group is taking currently is to review the current ICDR procedures and see what necessary updates need to be made to the procedures in order to bring them into alignment with the new ICANN bylaws, and then continuing to use ICDR in the immediate post-transition period. So that team is continuing to work and continue to drive forward, and it's not the work that ICANN is doing. We're simply reporting on the work of that group, and we're guessing here a little bit in terms of how much has been accomplished for this particular project. So that's sort of an overview of this IRP project.
Thanks.
Thanks, Chuck. Paul, please go ahead.
Thank you, Trang, for a very high-level overview. That was fantastic. I've just got a process question. I'd like to understand, and I apologize to esteemed colleagues on the call, but I'd like to understand what the role of the CWG is now with respect to the bylaws and articles of association, because you may have noticed in recent days, there's been some correspondence on the mailing list, but obviously those articles of association are currently out for public comment. Now, what is the CWG's role with respect to amending, changing, clarifying either the articles of incorporation or the bylaws, or once it's out for comment, has the CWG's role effectively stopped? I would welcome some clarification.
Thank you, Paul, and maybe I'll give a brief answer, and then Jonathan or Lisa, please come in as well as you see fit. So from staff perspective, obviously, the way that we're carrying out the work is, and from a process perspective, what we've been doing relating to all of the PTI materials is that we'll prepare a first draft of the material based on the CWG proposal that then gets circulated to the CWG to review and provide initial feedback on that first draft. ICANN staff will then incorporate those feedback and then post it for public comments. It's expected that the CWG can continue to review those documents while they're out for public comment and provide any additional feedback and input as part of the public comment process. And then after the public comment process, obviously it will follow the standard ICANN public comment process in that ICANN staff will summarize and analyze the comments and then bring back to the CWG any comments received where it's unclear whether or not implementation of that comment would cause any inconsistencies with the CWG proposal. So from staff's perspective, that's sort of how we're proceeding. And Jonathan and Lisa, I don't know if you have anything else that you'd like to add.
Thanks, Trang. Look, That is my understanding. It's something we didn't sort of, set out as a process up front, and I think it's driven partly by the speed with which we need to work. I think in an ideal world, we would be have the CWG sign off on the satisfaction with the bylaws or any other document prior to it going out to public comment. As it happens, the process is that, as you described, we're getting an early opportunity to provide input. The work is iterated, and then we have the further opportunity to put the input in during the public comment period. So it seems to me that it's imperfect, but driven by the requirements of the timescale as much as anything. Are there any other comments?
I appreciate that. I'm just wondering who approves. So the staff are doing a great job trying to capture the comments, both in the public comment and also the CWG views. But is it the CWG that says, yes, your articles of incorporation are in accordance with proposal, and that relates to the bylaws as well, or is it another body?
There's no other body involved, Paul. So really, I think in the end, they'll come back to staff will take the public comments, which will include our input, incorporate those and refer and offer them back to us for effectively a form of sign-off that they are consistent with the proposal. And for that, we will, to a lesser or greater extent, rely on assistance from Sidley as well as our own participants. So Lisa wants to come in here, so let me give Lisa the opportunity and then she'll be followed by Sam. Lisa, go ahead.
Thank you, Jonathan. Lisa, for the record. I agree with you on the process, and I think the way to actually solve that we haven't concluded finally on a strict process on this is actually to have ICANN staff help us by doing they incorporate the changes and we can follow these together with Sidley when they have the final draft and then if there are any major inconsistencies or major changes we should be signing off. But it has not been concluded finally that this is how we do, but I would think this would be the best way to do it as a way forward, and not to be very strict, but to be very flexible on a case-to-case to see how the public comments will change the actual draft. Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa. Sam?
Hi, this is Sam Eisner from ICANN Legal. I just wanted to confirm that for the PTA articles and the bylaws, that the ultimate place of approval is going to be the PTI board. So we're talking about the CWG's work and confirming that the bylaws and the articles that have been developed are consistent with the proposals. And we know that the CWG has provided some additional inputs that many of which have been incorporated into the bylaws during that review with Sidley. And then it's actually the PTI board and then also the ICANN board, as ICANN will be the member of ICANN, and to help move this process along, the ICANN board will also have a view over each of those two documents as well. And so I think we do have to recall that it's the PTI board that and those board members that will hold fiduciary duties to the new PTI organization that is anticipated to serve not only the naming function through the PTI ICANN naming function agreement that's being developed, but also the other parts of the community through the subcontracting will have to make the ultimate decision about the acceptance of the bylaws.
Thanks, Sam. That's a helpful and timely reminder. I guess it's also then it's worth going back to the beginning of the cycle and recognizing that at the drafting stage, there is direct interaction between Sidley and ICANN Legal. So you've essentially got drafting followed by release of key terms and or early drafts of documentation to CWG, initial feedback loop, reworking with feedback, then posting to public comment, taking public comment feedback, including from the CWG, reworking, bringing back to CWG, and then ultimately approval by PTI board. So that's helpful. It may even be worth, given the question and given the context, it might even be worth Trang and Sam putting some kind of little flowchart together on that as part of the implementation slides.
Thanks, Jonathan. We've prepared a few process slides in the past to share with the IOTF. We'll revisit those and see if we can maybe update them to reflect the current process and potentially share it with the group.
Thanks. Paul, I'm not completely sure I understand your chat comment, so maybe you want to come back in on the mic and explain it.
So I welcome the opportunity of clarification. So before Sam's intervention, I sort of got it. Namely, the CWG had a proposal. The members did their best to come up with the formation documents, assisted ably by ICANN staff. There were public comments, and then it came back to the CWG for ratification to make CWG members to make sure that indeed that the proposal had appropriately been captured by staff's good endeavours. Now I understand it is the in light of Sam's intervention, it is the board of a company that has not yet been formed is approving its own incorporation documents, which from a corporate governance perspective seems a bit weird. And that's why I'd welcome further clarification. But certainly when you, Jonathan, introduced it initially, it did make a lot more sense, namely ICANN working with Sidley and ICANN Legal came back with an interpretation back to the CWG members for approval, and then that in itself triggered the formation of the entity and the appointment of the board members, who then, as Sam rightly says, have a fiduciary duty to the entity that has recently been created. So I understand that path. I'm just a little confused with respect to ICANN approving an entity or improving an interpretation of the CWG's considered opinions, but without really having the CWG sign off on it.
Okay. The process I described, I don't think changed at all during that. The question is there an ultimate requirement from the who has the ultimate authority to accept these as the PTI documents? So Sam, is that the requirement that the board? It's interesting. Who has the legal responsibility to essentially incorporate PTI and sign off on PTI's formation documents? It feels like, from where I stand, it feels like either ICANN board or an ICANN board delegated to the PTI board, as you said. But that's different to the process, but it's the ultimate legal responsibility to, and I would hope that that's a step that's taken simply on the basis of the fact that the due process has been followed in advance of that. Trang, you want to come in, and then Sam, you may want to come in again after that.
Thank you, Jonathan. You actually said it exactly how I was going to highlight it. Is we're talking about two different processes here. One is the legal and formal approval of the articles and the bylaws, which is the fiduciary duties of the PTI and ICANN boards. But there is a process that leads us up to the final document that the ICANN and PTI boards would then formally approve. And that process where the CWG is involved in that process is, I believe, just ensuring that the staff-led, drafting of the documents are consistent with the CWG proposals, and that's with the assistance of Sidley, of course. So from a process perspective, I think we're talking about sign-off of the articles and the bylaws and other documents as being consistent with the CWG proposal, and I think that's obviously the responsibility of the CWG with the assistance of Sidley and ICANN staff as needed. And then there's the legal and formal approval of these documents, which is the responsibility of the PTI and ICANN boards. So, Paul, with regards to your latest note that CWG sign off and request ICANN formally incorporate, when the CWG signs off on the documents, the request that ICANN formally incorporate, that's going to be the ICANN board's job. When we present to the ICANN board the set of final articles of incorporation that's been signed off either by or agree to that it's not inconsistent with the CWG proposal, that would then be presented to the ICANN board for approval, and the ICANN board would then direct staff to move forward with the incorporation process.
Thanks, Trang. And I note, I hope we're on the same page. And as I say, the only way, because noting Sharon's comment, which Paul's agreed with, that the ICANN and PTI role is essentially a formal step at the end of the process. So I hope we have a common understanding, and Paul seems to confirm that in the chat. I think it would be useful to document it in some kind of flowchart, as I said a moment ago, because it just gives us the opportunity to buy into the process as much as anything. And I don't want us, if we do appear to agree or at least have a common understanding of it, we shouldn't spend too long deliberating it. But let's bear in mind that we do have other calls coming up shortly, so if we do have that to review, we can in a sense confirm it at the next meeting. I see your hand has come up, Chuck, so please come in.
Yeah, I wanted to wait till we resolve that, and I think we have. I just want to back up to Trang's commitment for staff to create some diagrams with regard to some of the last steps, and this may be what she has in mind, or maybe they already have a chart in this regard, but I think it would be really helpful to have a very detailed and concentrated timeline for the end of the public comment periods so that everyone in the CWG understands the very tight time frame and responsiveness that we will need to have in like, I don't know, it's probably a 2 or 3 week period. I don't remember the exact timeline, but full understanding of the responsiveness that the CWG is going to have after the public comments end, they're analyzed, and then in case there are any issues, we're going to have to be very responsive to that. So a detailed and concentrated timeline for that short period I think will be very helpful.
This is Trang. Thanks, Chuck. Will do.
Okay. Thanks, Chuck. That's helpful. So I think that that sets us up with a common understanding of the implementation and an opportunity to move then on to item three, which is the key issues with the help of Sidley, which have some substance to them. Now, as it turns out, at our last meeting, we asked Sidley to assist us by preparing a table of the key issues, table that contained or both those issues, the two issues with the articles and the remainder with the bylaws. It strikes me that we could utilize the time available well to walk through that table and start to discuss the substance of the key issues and get some input on those. We have in the meantime also seen the PTI governance documents, and Sidley have been provided with redline variants of those, as have all of you. But really, I think my initial read of that was I looked at those redline documents, and they did seem to be substantially similar at first view to the existing documents. So I don't currently anticipate those are going to cause us significant issues, whereas I think it would be very useful to walk through the headline points on the articles of incorporation and the bylaws. The other thing we need to do is be aware of the naming functions contract, which a draft has been provided on that. I expect from memory that Sidley have not had the opportunity to look at that properly at this point, and staff have provided the intercompany agreement headers. So it would be useful to hear from staff at some point in the next while as to their rationale and thinking behind the preparation of the naming function contract and the intercompany agreement. So that'll be one key area. But I think first let's perhaps focus in on these articles of incorporation and the bylaws, have a walk through those, and try and create some time at the end to make sure that we do hear from staff on those other two issues. And I think if we can deal with that, although there are other items on the agenda we'll try and accommodate, that's the more meaty issues that need to be looked at now. So unless someone disagrees with me, and if you feel I've missed something, let me know. But those are the substantial points, I think, that we really need to cover at this stage on this call. So, Sharon, do you feel able to talk us through and walk us through that table? I hope I haven't surprised you on Julie, but let me know if you think that it's possible to do so and to start to tease out together the responses that we might get from the group on those.
Hi, Jonathan. No, that's fine. I can walk you through that chart. It's largely what we talked about last week, but now you have it in front of you, so I think it'll be a little more helpful. So let me just start with the articles. There are 2 points there, and obviously the articles, we've got to comment on those more quickly. I think that the closing of the public comment is, I think, that's July 30th. So there are 2 things there. First is purpose, the purpose of the PTI. This will appear both in the articles and the bylaws. We had language in there that referenced ICANN, and I know there was some view that was not the appropriate purpose. Just a further clarification on that, in order for PTI to be a tax-exempt organization in the U.S., it needs to be a supporting organization, and to be a supporting organization, we need to include these magic words that refer to the purpose of the PTI being to operate for the benefit of, perform the functions of, and to carry out the purposes of ICANN. But what we can do is we can add language before we use the tax magic words that are more specific and that are more tailored to the PTI purpose. And I understand you all have been discussing that in email. We haven't seen any output from that. So maybe, Jonathan, I would ask you to just, if there's anything to say on where that stands.
Yeah, I may not be. I think Greg has been leading the discussion on the wording for the purpose, so it may be that's best coming from him. I'm not sure. I'm actually prepped to give a. I haven't looked at it in the last few hours to see where we are on that, to be honest. And there is one other thing I'll say, Sharon, while I've got the mic, and it's worth highlighting, I think, the point that we discussed at the client committee meeting, and that is the desirability of synchronizing the input on the articles and the bylaws and getting that in the mind of the group as well.
Yeah, let me speak to that, and then I will turn it to Greg to talk about the substance of the purpose. So on the articles and the bylaws, the comment that we had raised on the client committee call is that articles and bylaws of a corporation are very, very much linked, and we understand that you don't actually have to have bylaws in place in order to form a corporation, but nevertheless, the two documents go together hand in hand. Purpose is one example of where we want the documents to be consistent. The ability to amend the documents is another example. So we expressed some concern that the articles were getting too far out ahead of the bylaws, and that the idea that these articles would get filed with the state of California and the entity would be formed before we really know where the bylaws land caused us some concern. And part of that concern was that at other steps along the way, when documents get finalized, they get locked in, and then when we have issues that revert, you know, that reference back to those documents, we're told, well, those documents are final and nothing can be done. So that was where we had some concerns. I did see the comment that came from ICANN yesterday saying that the articles will not be locked in, and even if they're filed, that their people are open to amendments. That helps alleviate some of that concern, because I do think it's critical that we not consider the articles absolutely final when the bylaws are not yet completely final. Okay, with that, let me turn it over to Greg to talk about the purpose.
Thanks. It's Greg Chatton for the record. I wouldn't necessarily say I've been leading this discussion, but I've at least been following it. So in trying to be somewhat more specific, rather, you know, after the statement that the specific purpose of the corporation is to operate exclusively for the benefit of, to perform the functions of, and to carry out the purposes of the Internet Corporation for Sign Names and Numbers, ICANN, and putting something after that, there have been a couple of different suggestions floated out there. Chuck suggested putting at the end of that phrase related to the IANA services. I followed with a suggestion. Then there were a couple who seemed to think that was a good idea. Then I suggested that we need something more specific than just related to the IANA services, and noted that IANA services is a term of art, not defined, and perhaps, you know, thus to be avoided, at least as a matter of good drafting, if it's possible to avoid it, and suggested that we could use the statement of purpose that's in the current ICANN articles as a jumping-off point, and taking out certain things which are clearly being done by ICANN but not IANA, and complete the sentence by saying, namely, one, coordinating the assignment of Internet technical parameters as needed to maintain universal connectivity on the Internet, two, performing and overseeing functions related to the coordination of the Internet protocol address space, three, performing and overseeing functions related to coordination of the Internet domain name system, and four, overseeing operation of the authoritative Internet DNS root server system. Andrew Sullivan responded, I think you are rapidly walking into angry terminological disputes that will delay the incorporation of PTI. What about saying something like relating to certain Internet registries and certain Internet domain name system zones consistent with ICANN's mission or something like that? Chuck then responded that Andrew's suggestion works for him, and that's where the conversation stands at the moment.
So, Greg, it's Jonathan. I think I'm sorry I sort of dumped you in that a little bit. I hadn't realized that. I've sort of, but it does strike me that this is work in progress, Sharon and Greg. So in a sense, I mean, I think for the purposes of this call, really the key is to recognize that the CWG is working on a response to that purpose. So we seem to be making reasonable progress online. And I'm not sure it serves us well to spend a lot of time trying to workshop that now. We'll pause to see if you feel differently. But it feels to me like what we really need to do is try and capture, with the help of anyone taking notes on this, any substantial inputs, in particular where there are substantial questions. So here, the substantial question is, we know we need to beef up the purpose, and that's the work that needs to be done and is being done at the moment. So I'm not sure how much more we can reasonably do on the call, but if others want to come in on that, feel free to provide input. And I see, Chuck, your hand is raised.
Thanks, Jonathan. And first of all, let me thank Sharon for the clarity she gave, because it's important to understand that some magic words need to be in there for California law. So that's accepted. But I'm not sure that those of us in the CWG are the right ones. Certainly others are more qualified than me, like Greg. But I wonder if Sharon can help us, address the concern. I think if we try to continue to wordsmith, we're going to still need that legal expertise so that the magic words aren't compromised in any way. I think my suggestion is that if the co-chairs agree, to ask Sharon to help us fix the language to address the concern. I agree we shouldn't try and fix it on this call. But rather than just continuing the dialogue on the list, I think some legal help here would probably solve it fairly quickly. I don't think it's a complicated thing we're trying to do. And without the legal expertise, we may compromise the magic words that need to be there. So that's my suggestion.
Thanks, Chuck. I think that's helpful and practical, and to that extent, I think, you know, any help we can get at this stage. I mean, this is all getting quite technical and into the final yards, and to the extent that Sidley can help us with suitable language that we can then work with to either sign off on or ask for changes to, will be helpful in this regard. Greg, I see your hand is up, and Sharon, yours was, but so come in after Greg in any event, Sharon. Greg, go ahead.
Thanks. I agree that we're, kind of trying to workshop it on this call is not going to be the best use of this call's time. But a couple of thoughts on process. One, I don't think now that Sharon currently has visibility into the back and forth on this particular question, so I would propose adding her specifically to the thread on which that is being discussed. As I think that, this is going to need to be collaborative. Sharon can help us shape this the best way it works for a legal document, but, is not going to be the world's foremost authority on the IANA functions. So we can have, a little bit more back and forth on the list, before we kind of bring this back to the group, or rather the group can watch it as it is. We see CWG stewardship thing, but if Sharon can kind of help us mold this. And, one specific thought and question is whether it's appropriate, especially given the way PTI is being formed and the, separability possibilities of each of the three communities, that in some fashion the purpose should express the tripartite nature of the IANA functions, for each of the three communities. I think the language that I took out of the articles might do that, but as Andrew noted, it also gets into language issues that we dealt with at length in the CCWG accountability. Don't need to deal with again here. Andrew's language may not neatly in any way allow for, visibility into the kind of the three separate streams of work. Another way to think about this is if we do the purpose now and one of the three communities opt out, shouldn't it be clear how the purpose would be changed if, for instance, protocol parameters decided to take their IANA function business elsewhere? How would you change the purpose? And is it clear that the purpose shows, you know, in some high-level fashion what is being done for that community? Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. I understand two things there. Well, first of all, I mean, my understanding is that the purpose is not immutable, and maybe someone can help me with that. The purpose could be changed in principle over time if to address your last point, if that became necessary through an obvious and clear change of circumstances. I think I'd go back to my point that I made at the beginning of this whole meeting. We've got to the CWG's got to give the relevant input where required, but to the extent that we can either take up Sidley's assistance and or that offered by Sam in the chat with ICANN Legal, I mean, I think if there's a concern expressed and it can readily be resolved, an alternative proposed to the CWG, in many ways, my sense is that we should be trying to sign off either say something is inadequate and then sign off on an improved version. If we are required to provide more substantial and complicated input, then so be it. But I'm just very conscious with the sort of at a point in the process where even with our high-intensity meetings, we've got a limited number of meetings to try and achieve quite a lot. And so thank you, Chuck, for supporting that. I think to the extent that we can get ICANN Legal and Sidley to work together to address the concerns raised in this table and provide forms of wording and help us move on in any of these will be very helpful. Let me hand back to you then, Sharon.
Thanks, Jonathan. And I think the structure that Greg is proposing that Grace posted in the chat is the right structure, which is to reference the supporting organization language and then say, you know, specifically, and then go through the list of what the specifics are. So we can help work through the language, but I think structurally that's the right approach. Okay, well, the next item is the amendments of the articles, and this is item 2. I don't know if we have scroll function. Yeah, it looks like we do. Okay, so item 2 is what standard is required in order to amend the bylaws? And we had come back and said that we thought 4/5 of the directors would be appropriate. That would, by definition, include at least one ICANN director and at least one nominating committee director. And we thought that the original request that all of these higher threshold items require both nominating committee directors would give too much power to the nominating committee directors because one director could block all of the key actions. So question for CWG is if that is acceptable. Okay, I don't see any, I see Cheryl with a check mark. I don't see anyone raising their hand with objections, and I see Chuck and Paul coming in on chat supporting that. Okay, good. All right, so that's the articles. So I think really the key here is in terms of process to be able to comment on the articles in time for the closing of the public comment period is to resolve the purpose. We would also attach to the comment letter the more minor comments that we had provided earlier as a red line. But those are, I think, fairly minor. Okay, so then let's move on to the PTI bylaws, if you continue to scroll down. The first issue here is the principal office, and this came up on the last CWG call, which is whether or not the principal office of PTI could be moved out of California. And I think it was suggested on the call last week that we could consider the approach that was taken to this issue in the ICANN bylaws. And you can see the language is posted here in this chart, which says that the principal office will be in Los Angeles, California, and that here PTI could have a different additional office from time to time. And we thought that maybe given that there had been some work done in the ICANN context, maybe that would be good to just borrow that concept. Anyone have any comments on that? Okay. Seeing none, I will keep moving then. Number 2 in this is the purpose again, so that is, we just already talked about, we can skip that one. Number 3 is another purpose issue for the bylaws, and that is the Annex C items. As you probably recall, there was discussion about including portions of Annex C from the CWG proposal in the PTI bylaws themselves, and there was some concern raised that some of those concepts were inconsistent with the proposal and also difficult to implement through bylaws. I don't know if there's been any more discussion on that. We did include the two clauses that ICANN Legal was suggesting to capture some of the principles of Annex C without getting into some of the more detailed language. Okay, I will then keep going. Going on to number four, which is director qualifications, this was the question around diversity, and the comment that CWG had given back to us was a request that diversity be looked at as between the two nominating committee directors and then as between the two non-president ICANN directors, each group being looked at separately. And the thought there is that it's difficult to come up with diversity when you're looking at two people. And would it be more appropriate for the nominating committee in looking at their two nominating committee directors to look at the overall diversity of the five and with the goal of enhancing diversity? And so that's what's reflected here in the comments. Okay, I'm going to keep moving then. Number five on the list is the chair of the board. There had been a comment that the chairperson of the PTI should be selected from among the two nominating committee directors, and the comment there was, is that too restrictive? Would there be an excellent chair who couldn't be engaged because he or she was not one of the NomCom directors? And the thought was, you know, do we have other protections in place that avoid the need to ensure that the nominating committee be also the chair? I see Paul's hand up. Paul?
Just a quick question of clarification for diversity, your previous point. It's very, very important that rather than focus on politically correct, we get people that are technically or managerially responsible. And I'm wondering if it's possible that whilst diversity needs to be considered, and obviously I'm very aware the first two external directors are from the European region, but they are selected on merit, not on geographical location. I'm wondering if we can weaken the diversity angle, or if it's contentious. I haven't been following it, and I apologize, but I would far rather competent people were involved than picking people who are either not passionate about it or not willing to commit the time, albeit they come from the right geographical area. Thanks.
And Paul, in the language, the diversity language does reflect geography, culture, skills, experience, and perspective. So it is a more holistic view of diversity. I don't know if that addresses your concern.
Well, Sharon, it's Jonathan. Let me come in here as well, because I think to allay Paul's concern, I think first and foremost, the criteria for selection would be that the candidate was appropriately qualified. And if and only if the candidate or candidates were appropriately qualified, does one then apply a diversity criteria in addition? I don't think it's diversity trumps effective qualification. So this is in addition to rather than in substitute for appropriate qualification.
Paul, is that a new hand? No. Okay. Okay. Yeah, and I think that's clear already. Obviously, all members of the board have to be qualified. Just in general, I think this is meant to be an additional qualification, which is to say, and overall, we'll look at diversity across all of those different characteristics. Okay. Well, let me move then. So we were talking about number five, the board chairperson. I didn't see anyone with any comments about removing that restriction and then just allowing the chair to be whoever the board decides is best suited for that role. And recall that the president is not qualified to be the chair. It would have to be one of the other directors. Okay. Number six is the terms of the directors. And we had advised that in California, you can have anywhere between 1 and 4 years as the term. You had recommended 2 years. The comment that came back from ICANN is that the term of 2 years, and given that these terms are staggered, means that every year you're constantly having an onboarding process, and that could be disruptive and would not ensure the smooth functioning of the board. So the question was whether a 3-year term would be acceptable. Anyone have any reactions to that? Okay. I don't see any hands on that. Okay. Next is term limits, number 7. And that is, the provision is that the nominating committee directors may serve for no more than 2 terms. And the question was, is that also too restrictive? Will you not get the benefit of the experience of someone who's having served on the PTI board for a number of years? We did note that in the ICANN bylaws, there's a 3-term term limit, and so that's a concept that could be borrowed if people were comfortable with that. So 3-year terms with no more than 3 consecutive terms. Okay. Seeing no objections. Okay, Chuck comments in the chat, if the terms are 3 years, then 2-year term limit is good, so a total of 6 years. So if we extend the term, maybe we keep the 2 term limits, the 2, you know, consecutive periods. Paul Kane supporting that as well. Okay. All right. That sounds like there's some consensus there. All right, number 8 is the topic we've already discussed, which is when do you need supermajority approval of the board? This is the 4/5, so that's the same point, so I won't go over that one again. Number 9, let me just look at the chat for just a minute. Donna comes in, the 3-year term is consistent with the ICANN board directors. Okay, thanks, Donna. All right, number 9 is board fees. There was a question whether this, and it sounds like maybe this wasn't even intended, but as the feedback came back from CWG, it was that their expenses could be reimbursed for the nominating committee directors, but not the ICANN-nominated directors. And the thought was, really, should it be just consistent? All directors are reimbursed for their expenses, not compensated otherwise, but everyone has the same treatment. And we thought that made sense. Okay. Number 10, board committees. The establishment of board committees has a higher voting threshold. It's the 4/5 issue, and that's the same issue we discussed earlier. Number 11, the budget and the strategic plan. I don't think we have anything to add there. I think we all note that there's a little bit of a timing issue around the 270 days. Is there anything, Chuck, you want to come in on this with? Okay. I don't see Chuck coming in, so we'll just, I think.
Sorry about that. I was on mute. I was talking to myself. So, yeah, I think that'll be close to resolution later this week. We have a DTO call on Wednesday, on tomorrow. And Xavier and his team are going to have some suggestions in terms of how to deal with this. I think it's Xavier and I talked in Helsinki, and I think we're on the same page, and I think it's all solvable, and I think hopefully we'll know more after tomorrow, but I think we'll be able to resolve this one and so that the CWG proposal matches the process. And again, I don't think that's a hard thing to do, and Xavier seems to feel the same way.
Thanks, Chuck. Okay, the last item is amendments, and so what's the vote required to amend the bylaws? And that's the same issue, the 4/5 issue, so I think we have clarity on that. I think that's all we had on the articles and bylaws. I'll turn it back to you, Jonathan.
Thanks, Sharon. That was an efficient tour through those. So I guess the question then in my mind from a practical point of view is how do we populate this table with the content of this discussion? Because ideally we'd then bring the table back, populate it with the discussion, and get agreement that this was the CWG's view, and that really sets us in train then to provide appropriate, it's the basis on which the relevant public comment note can be drafted. Sharon, your hand's up, so come back in on that.
Yeah, Jonathan, I was just wondering if we wouldn't go straight to the draft comment letter. I think we understand the direction, other than the purpose, which is open, and then potentially one timing issue on the budget. I think it might be more efficient to just go to the letter, but defer to you.
Yeah, that seems perfectly sensible, and then we've used the table as a device to flush out the issues, but we don't need to necessarily go back to it. If there are no objections from the group, that seems sensible to me. And in fact, we could then, in principle, be looking at that draft comment letter at one of the two next forthcoming meetings. And also, I think that will help us with potentially synchronizing that input with the input on the articles. I guess since they are two separate public comments, Sharon, this is just thinking off the top of my head, the one thing we will need to do is probably put in two different comments so that it's clear, but they will need to be synchronized. But if we work in that way, we should be able to do it well in time to meet the public comment deadline of the articles. We should be able to put in the comment for both, I think, by that deadline. Sharon, go ahead.
Yeah, Jonathan, I think we're envisioning two comment letters to deal with the two different comment periods. So we'll draft the article comment letter and then the bylaws comment letter, and then we just, in the bylaws comment letter, the purpose, which will just be carried over from the articles comment letter, we'll just leave that as a placeholder for now.
Okay, great. Well, that's sensible. Thank you. So given that we've dealt with all of that, and given that the header to this section asks about dealing with Annex B, and Paul has asked about that in the chat, maybe that this is the right time now to move on to that and understand where we are with that agree where to go forward. Now, my recollection of where we've come from and where we are is we had the NXC, we talked about where that might be where that might be accommodated in the incorporation documents. There was the possibility of incorporating those concerns in the bylaws, the the naming agreement, or both. I think Sidley's initial view was that this could be accommodated by the naming agreement, but then there was a request that it would be, or an understanding that it would somehow be stronger if it was in both the bylaws and the naming agreement. Then there was pushback from, I believe, ICANN Legal to say it's more appropriate in the naming agreement, and that's where it currently stands to be proposed to be incorporated. Have I sketched that out accurately, and is there any difference of view on that from either Sidley or ICANN Legal or anyone else? And if so, I guess then ideally, if that is the case, we should look at how it is incorporated. We should hand over to staff to hear how it's incorporated in the naming agreement. And, Paul, perhaps the question comes up then, because sequentially that's where we intend to go now. And at the same time, we can ask the question as to why it should or should not, or how it be in the bylaws. Trang, do you intend to address that as part of your tour of the naming agreement?
Hi, Jonathan, this is Trang. No, I was not intending to go to that level of detail on the naming functions contract and intercompany services agreement. I was mainly going to explain how the documents were constructed. So I think if we want to have a substantive discussion on Annex C, that should take place separate from the update that I'm going to give on the naming functions contract and intercompany agreement.
Why don't you give us those updates now, and then we'll take the cue to then come back in on this on the where and how we incorporate the accommodation of Annex C after that, because that seems like the right sequence. So why don't you come in on the naming functions and intercompany agreement? Give us your background on that, and we'll see where we go from there.
Thank you, Jonathan. Yes, and Brenda, for this discussion, could we please first load the Annex S and E mapping table. And while Brenda is loading that, just a reminder to the group that we have, I think I can circulate it to the CWG and Annex C chart that indicate how each provision, I guess, of the annex is either incorporated or not incorporated, and the reason why. So perhaps that is something, you know, Paul, that maybe you could reveal if you have not had a chance to do that. And then if there are any specific questions regarding, you know, that any of the items in that Annex C table, then perhaps we could bring that up for discussion. All right, so with that, I will move on to the overview of the naming contract. As you know, we circulated a draft, a first draft of the naming function contract, as well as the intercompany services agreement, and we'd like to just provide you with a quick overview of how the naming functions contract was constructed with the hope that it will help you in the review of the document. What we have shown you here is not the contract itself, but a mapping table that we did of the various provisions that are within Annex E and Annex S of the CWG proposal and how that mapped to the various sections within the naming function contract. So as background, the naming function contract was constructed mainly and most importantly to be consistent with the CWG proposal. From that perspective, we started with a base from Annexes E and S of the CWG proposal. As you can see there, Annex E was titled IANA contract provisions to be carried over post-transition and then in parentheses statement of work. And then the title of Annex S was draft proposed term sheet. And then in parentheses, as proposed by legal counsel. So using those two annexes as a base document, what we then did was review each of the provisions from these two annexes specifically, and we did either one of three things. Either we carried over exactly the provision because the provision was consistent with the CWG proposal as well as to the post-transition environment, or two, we carry it over with some modifications for relevancy to the naming function contract because, as you know, a lot of the provisions that are in the current IANA function contract deals with all three IANA functions. So in some instances, we had to modify those provisions for relevancy to just the naming function, or the modifications was made to reflect current practices in a lot of the provisions that are in the IANA functions contract. It talks about standing up systems and processes and development of reports, et cetera. And, of course, those systems and reports in many cases are already in existence. So the language was updated to reflect current practices. And then in some instances, the language was also updated to be consistent with the post-transition environment. So, for example, instead of detailing the specifics of the reports that are detailed in the current IANA functions contract, what we actually did was just make references to development of the report formats with the CSC and complying with whatever format is agreed to between PTI and the CSC once the CSC is formed. So that types of changes. Or number three, it is possible that we did not carry over the provision because the provision is already being addressed elsewhere, such as in the root zone maintainer agreement or the PTI conflict of interest policy. An example would be there are a few provisions that are in the current IANA functions contract that deal with conflict of interest, and as you know, PTI will have its own conflict of interest policy. So a lot of the conflict of interest provisions would not carry over because obviously PTI would be governed by its own conflict of interest policy. And then in addition to the provisions that are in these two annexes, we also reviewed the PTI bylaws and make sure that we carried over any appropriate obligations such as the separation cross community working group recommendations if they are approved by the ICANN board. So we carry that over into the naming function contract. We also carry over things such as the requirement for PTI to prepare and submit to ICANN an annual budget. That's reflected in the PTI bylaws. And then we also specifically made a commitment in the naming function contract that ICANN provide the necessary personnel, material, equipment, and services and facilities for PTI to perform the obligations under the agreement. So any of those types of obligations that are required in the PTI bylaws that's appropriate to be carried over in the naming function contract, we carried them over. We also added to the naming function contract an annex that contained all of the service level expectations that were defined by the design team A. That table is blank right now. It just has the metrics that were defined. And then once the thresholds for these SLEs are agreed to with the CWG, then we will insert them into the annex. And then finally, we rounded out the agreement with some of the standard contractual terms. There's a notices section, there's some language around assignments and subcontracting, et cetera, just all of the provisions that are pretty standard to a contract. So in a nutshell, that's an overview of how the naming function contract was constructed. As I mentioned, this mapping table should give you an overview of, how the provisions were carried over and what, if any, changes were made to each of the provisions. The document is quite long. I don't think I'll be spending time on this call to go through every single item. I think it's a helpful tool for CITLI as well as for the CWG to read through. And then if there are any questions or concerns, then certainly they can be raised. And then with regards to the intercompany services agreement, Brenda, would it be okay to ask you to please load that? The issue that or concern that was raised previously by CITLI was whether or not the naming function contract should be combined with the intercompany services agreement. And so the purpose of providing the header sections for the intercompany services agreement is to provide some visibility into what would be contained in that agreement, for CITLI's review as well as for the CWG's review. We believe that the two should be separate. As you will be able to see, the information that would be contained in the intercompany services agreement are more operational in nature. It mainly defines what services would be provided by ICANN to PTI. There will be a cost-related section where the cost of those services would be detailed out, there's facilities and things like that. So it's of a lot more operational in nature, and we think it should not, should be separate and not subject to the same sort of amendment rigor as the naming function contract would be, mainly just for operational flexibility. It's a document that over time, should be able to be amended between ICANN and PTI to ensure the proper functioning of PTI to be able to perform the obligations under the naming function contract. So I think you have scroll control and you can kind of scroll through and look at this document. If there are anything that's reflected in the intercompany services agreement that the CWG believes would be significant and should be subject to the rigor of the amendment process, that's something that we should that should be flagged and then potentially be inserted into the naming function contract instead of it residing in the services agreement. We don't think there would be, but would be open to any such review and flagging. Just reading the comments in the chat real quick. PTI will perform Diana functions on behalf of ICANN. Sounds like good language for the purpose discussion. Okay. So that is it in terms of a quick overview of the two agreements. And I will stop there and see if there are any questions or comments. Thank you. Okay, seeing no no hands up or anything in the chat, Jonathan, I will hand it back to you.
Thank you, Trang. Just coming off mute on the phone. So that gives a decent flavor of the motivation and background to the preparation of those documents. Are there no other comments or questions on those at this stage? I would appreciate confirmation as to where we are with, as I said in the chat, the incorporation of Annex C. My understanding is that that's now the provisions or guidance given there is will be incorporated into the naming agreement as opposed to the bylaws, and that's the intention. Is anyone able to confirm that? I know Paul has dropped off. Sam, go ahead.
Thanks. This is Sam Eisner from ICANN Legal. There was when Sidley was providing the CWG with copies of the PCI bylaws for CWG review, one of the documents that was provided was some reactions and notes to the language that had been proposed for to incorporate some of the Annex C items. So Sidley, during the a preceding period, Sidley had worked with a couple members of the CWG to develop some language to put some specific wording around some of the Annex C principles. That language was provided to ICANN, and in the development of the bylaws as well as in the contract, ICANN went through and provided some responses to that table to indicate where things were being brought in principle, where we thought that there were terms that already reflected it, and where there was some concern over the language that had been proposed, particularly in consistency, either with the proposal or with existing practice. So I'd encourage, and Brenda, maybe you can help, or Grace, maybe you can help recirculate that Annex C table that that had been provided earlier to the full CWG to review to take up this conversation further, because there are definitely portions of the concepts that are expressed in Annex C that remain, were part of how the CWG evaluated the proposal and remain reflected either in the bylaws or in the contract. And there are also specific areas of language that had been proposed in that interim work that Sidley was assisting with that are not reflected in either place because there were concerns with that specific language. So if that could be recirculated, I think that would be helpful to carry on this Annex C conversation.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. That will be helpful to tidy that up, and it'll be clear then how those various points have been handled. So that will be useful. Thank you. All right. So we've got a pretty good idea of the origin and structure of the naming functions contract and the intercompany agreement. And then for the remainder of this call, I guess we can cover off any outstanding issues at this stage with respect to the other items that are flagged on the agenda. Just for the sake of good order, has anyone got any comment or point they would like to raise with respect to those documents, the governance documents, the PTI governance documents that for which the red lines have been provided? Any comments on those? That's the code of conduct, the conflict of interest, and the third document is, but those three documents. Has anyone got any particular point they'd like to make on those at this stage? We haven't heard from Sidley since they've seen the red lines of those documents, red line version of those documents. All right, let's go then and hear from, given the sequence with which these appear on the agenda, from Alan, if there's any updates on the work relating to the RZERC charter, first of all. So Alan Greenberg, can you provide us with, I think you sent something to the list earlier, so it may be that you just want to refer to that, or is there anything else you would like to add at this point?
Yeah, I'm not going to comment on the RZERC charter
as a whole, there's a number of changes that have been suggested in the public comment period, and I guess Trang is probably the best one to do any of those. I did comment on the IOTF in a previous IOTF meeting, one of that I missed. There was a suggestion of some criteria for the ARZRC members, and I found those, to be honest, close to insulting, in that we said things like the people have to have some idea of what the DNS is, or wording like that, and I proposed some rewording that essentially said it is up to that each of the appointing organizations knows what this is. This is an important group that will oversee any architectural and operational changes in the root zone, and it must appoint people who are capable of addressing those issues, that specifically have a good overall understanding of the DNS and the root zone, and a strong understanding and ability to work with their appointing organization on things that are specific to those organizations. Given that we have such a diverse group of people, some of whom may be experts on a small area, but not necessarily experts on the other parts, I don't think we can be very prescriptive as to what the skills are. But we're looking for top-rate people here who can interface with their organizations, and I don't think we can be more specific than that. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Alan. Trang, did you want to come in then with other points about handling the public comments and where we are with that?
Thank you, Jonathan. Yes, I did prepare a couple of slides as per the suggestion to show you where we are with the analysis of the comments. And while that's being loaded, we just want to take the opportunity to thank you, Alan, for coming in and providing some suggestions to the qualifications. I did take a look at those, and they look good to me. I did tell Alan that I may make a few minor suggestions to one of the paragraphs that was suggested. But I agree. I think we need to provide some guidelines, and I think those are good guidelines to provide the appointing organizations for us to get the ball started. All right. So now turning to the analysis of the comments that have been submitted. There were seven parties, individuals and organizations that submitted comments to the ARZRC charter. I've organized the comments. Brent, I don't know if we can release scroll control or if you want to scroll for us. Okay, terrific. Thank you. So the slide number two is a summary of all of the comments suggested where no updates are required because the concern raised in the comments are already being addressed by the proposed charter, so no additional action is required, or the implementation of the suggestion would cause inconsistency with the CWG proposal. There were several that has suggested changes to the composition of the ARZRC membership, and that is something that is very clearly specified in the CWG proposal. So to expand the membership base of the ARZRC would create an inconsistency with the proposal. So we don't recommend implementing any suggestions that would cause the inconsistency. The next slide summarizes the suggestions and comments that we will implement, and those are either adding some additional background information that would be that would provide context to the existence of the committee, which we think is a good suggestion. There's also some minor text updates that we could do to provide additional clarity around some of the things that are highlighted there in terms of whether the ARZRC would originate proposals and recommendations, or whether or not they would consider issues that are raised to the committee. So there's some language in the proposal that we can pull from that could provide those the clarification around some of these areas. These are the type of things that we will be making updates to the charter to further clarify. With regards to the RSAC comments, the RSAC submitted several specific requested edits with the goal of clarifying the purpose and scope of responsibilities for the RZERG so that it doesn't infringe upon the RSAC's area of responsibility. We may not be implementing the exact edits provided by the RSAC, but we are aware of the concern and the request for additional clarity around the purpose and scope of the RZERG. So we are contemplating adding some language to the purpose and scope of responsibility sections of the charter that would clarify that it would not be the RZERG area of responsibility to get involved in issues that have to do with the operation of the root servers. We are still having discussions with the RSAC on their comments and potentially how to move forward in terms of addressing their comments and requests for additional clarity. So that's not completely nailed down yet. We're still having discussions with the RSAC, but that is how we but we hope to be able to address that concern by adding some additional language, purpose and scope of responsibilities sections. And then the last slide I have here summarizes a couple of points that have been raised where these are not the type of things that are in the CWG proposal. They were discussed within the IOTF, and language was drafted for the quorum and voting threshold. And there are some comments around needing some additional details around the quorum and voting threshold, and then the RYSG commenting that additional language should be added to prevent disproportionate share of influence because ICANN, based on the membership composition, would have two seats on the committee, one from the ICANN board and one from PTI. The other thing that ICANN would like to flag for the CWG relating to this particular area is, you know, whether or not a full consensus is going to cause any issues in terms of the ability of the group to accomplish any decisions because it's quite a diverse group, like Alan had mentioned, and would there be issues with reaching full consensus on all issues by the group, or would a rough consensus, you know, be adequate? So that's at a high level a summary of the comments received. Alan, please go ahead.
Yeah, 2 points. First of all, with regard to the RSAC comments of regarding operation of the root servers, I think we have a nomenclature problem that we talk about the RZERG being responsible for operational changes. Now, certainly from the point of view when those words were originally crafted, we were looking at things such as, you know, a major software change in IANA, or I guess with the root zone maintainer is a similar one. And that's not the same as operational changes within some entity where the external parts of it are not changed at all. So we are using the term operation in two different ways, and we may need a bit of clarification to say we're not delving specifically into the workings of something such as the root servers. We're certainly not going to get involved, at least I don't think it would get involved, you know, if one root server decided to go to a different software level or something like that, or even a different software version. The other question that is of the issue of do we need full consensus or partial consensus? And again, I'm going to harp back to the fact that these are high-level people representing their groups. If one of the members of the RZERG says, I and my whole organization object strenuously to something, presumably they're going to back that up with a reason, and the rest of the RZERG will take notice. I mean, that's why we have the diverse people there, to raise issues that someone else might not have seen. So I think we're going to have to leave it to the discretion of that group whether full consensus or partial consensus is sufficient in any given area. These are people who are presumably going to care passionately about the Internet working, and hopefully hopefully will not do anything really dumb. Therefore, individual concerns are going to have to be dealt with, but I don't think we can second-guess the outcome on a particular issue. So I'm happy with implying partial consensus, knowing that the group may well insist on full consensus to make some decisions. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Chuck, please go ahead.
Thanks. I think I'm in agreement with Alan on what he just said, but I would avoid the use of the term full consensus, and I don't think it's in there now, because full consensus in my mind means unanimous, and I think it's good if they can be unanimous, but like Alan said, I think we should leave that to them to define what consensus means and what they're comfortable with in terms of consensus. But I definitely would avoid the term full consensus just because that means unanimity, and in our world, that is often not realistic. So that's my suggestion.
Thank you, Chuck, and confirm that full consensus is not the current language in the proposed charter. It just talks about consensus. Right, and Alan wrote additionally that we should mandate that in any given issue, they may well want unanimity, but that is an ARZERC decision. Okay, so given that, we will most likely leave the language as is and not make any updates with relating to quorum and voting threshold. So that is it in terms of an update on how the staff analysis on the ARZERC charter comments are progressing.
Thank you very much. And it sounds like you've got some a little bit further input and some encouraging comments as well. So that's good to hear. I think we're coming towards the end of what we ideally need to cover off now. Certainly it would be useful to get a quick update, I think, on the work of the IPR group. There are a series of outstanding items that need to be talked through with the other groups, and but really we intend to pick that up primarily next week at a to-be-scheduled call. So I don't think there'll be a material update for you on Thursday on this, but we may want some input on Thursday before going into that call next week. So, Greg, why don't I hand over to you for a five-minute update on the INIPR work, to the extent that I hope I haven't stolen your thunder, but please go ahead and provide any additional or complimentary update to that.
Sure. Thanks, Jonathan. Greg Chatton again, for the record, and at the risk of possibly repeating what's been said or what's been seen on the list. Where things currently stand is that on the principal terms document, we've been through one round of comments with Sidley already, and a second round of comments was distributed by Sidley to the client committee last week, I've posted to the client committee list potential responses to their remaining comments, which number about seven. Then that can be moved from that list to the CWG stewardship list for further comment and resolution on those points. At the same time, we've decoupled review of the principal terms from reviewing the definitive documents, feeling that their issues were few enough and discreet enough with regard to those in the principal terms that we can move forward on those documents. The counsel for the IETF Trust prepared first drafts of both a license agreement and a community agreement. Very recently, Sidley has provided back to, again, to the client committee, their comments on those two documents so recently that I have not yet had a chance to review the comments. I'm looking forward to that, and those should move through the same process from the client committee to the full list I'll try to get that moving quickly. There is not yet a draft of the assignment agreement from ICANN to the IETF Trust, but that's the simplest of the three documents, and we'll make sure that that catches up to the other two in short order. Finally, there is a call being scheduled, sort of an all-hands call of the IPR negotiating teams, if you will, from the three communities plus the IETF Trust, to the extent the IETF Trust can be distinguished from the IETF. And that is being scheduled for next week, because this week is the IETF meeting in Berlin, and thus, you know, opportunities, you know, for time that all could share and not have to be in six other places at once would be limited at best for those who are participating in IETF. So we're looking to a call for in the front end of next week for you know, the entire group that's been kind of working on the IANA IPR so far from the three communities, plus adding in outside counsel in each case for those communities. So that is, I think, where things stand at the moment. If, happy to see if there are any questions or the like on this point.
Thanks, Greg. That's a helpful update. So hopefully that's put a couple of others in the picture. Lisa, did you want to come in at this point?
Thank you, Jonathan. I'm not coming in on the IANA IPR. I would just wanted to remind the group of the email we sent today to Sidley. We actually sent it to Sharon, but it's more an email to Sidley regarding the way forward in relation to the naming functions agreement and the inter-company agreement, where we actually were underlining that we rely on Sidley to assist us with these agreements and to highlight any areas of concern, because At the moment, things are moving really fast, and we need to ensure that we have all the details analyzed by Sidley. So this is just a reminder to all of us that Sidley are assisting us on this, and we will require, or not require, but hopefully have them to help us on all the calls we're having going forward. Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa. And so this is being dealt with generally via the client committee, and I think we are doing a reasonable job of both working with Sidley, with ICANN Legal, and keeping the group connected with that work of the client committee. We've really covered the key areas, the articles, the bylaws, the governance documents, the naming contract, and the intercompany agreement. So I think it really, we can probably move on to AOB with that rather than going into any further detail on the client committee, because we've effectively picked up those points as we went through the meeting. And there is the SLE team call on Thursday looking at the output of the measurements and the work going on with respect to SLEs, and that call will be made open to anyone from the CWG who would like to involve themselves or participate in that. And then our next meeting is scheduled for Thursday this week at a different time. It's, depending on where you are, it will be more favorable or less favorable. It's, we had a request to be better accommodating of more Asia-Pacific type regions, and so we're going to try out a 600 UTC call on Thursday, which of course is nasty for anyone over on the west coast of the US, and apologies for that, but generally we've been very accommodating to your time zone, I hope. So let's hope that we get some appropriate attendance for that call, and we'll deal with that. Lisa and I will review the prospective agenda for that tomorrow and update you very shortly, and we'll be in touch from there. So I think that brings it to a close. Thanks very much, everyone.